Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
So everybody's noticing how difficult it is to get some things, and sometimes it surprises you. You wouldn't expect that to be affected by the pandemic and the workshop stoppage and the supply chain disruption. But lo and behold, you can't get X. The Wall Street Journal wrote about it by describing the supply chain and how it's affect the delivery of a single hot tub. Austin Hufford wrote the piece, and Austin joins us now on WGN. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
A good idea. You know, I think we all speak about this in large, sort of vague terms, but if you examine just one single thing, you get a sense of how interconnected the world is, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, both how interconnected and also how even things that seem simple, a hot tub, how many parts and how many steps it takes to reach your backyard. It goes through so many different hoops.
So how many parts? How many steps?
So I guess for me, the stat that was crazy is that for this one hot tub, which is made in Utah, it takes 887,000 miles to reach your home. That's how many, how far the individual parts travel. They go from China, they come from Mexico, they come from Idaho, they come from all over the world and all over the country to reach the factory in Utah. And that to me was just, it's crazy just how long that is.
This is no ordinary hot tub. This is the Bullfrog Spa M9 model. So this is a nice one, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's large. I think it's, you know, seat like 6 or 8 people. You know, it's definitely a little bit on the fancier end. But, you know, basically there's 500 workers in Utah. They assemble 1,850 parts. And, you know, they've been struggling to increase output to get the hot tubs into backyards as people want.
And why have these parts been in short supply?
I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to, if you go back to March of 2020, so last year when the pandemic started, all of these factories basically, you know, cut output. You know, they basically pulled out their recession playbooks. They thought that we were going to be entering a prolonged downturn. A lot of them, you know, maybe they were stuck at home too. They were abiding by some of the pandemic rules. But at the same time as they were cutting output, consumers started to buy in mass quantities. You know, if you're stuck at home, you look around, you say, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll repaint my living room. Maybe I'll add a hot tub. Maybe I'll do X, Y, or Z. And so we basically saw a cut in production at the same time as we saw a massive increase in demand. And essentially the manufacturing capacity has been struggling to fill that gap ever since. And here we are 18 months later, and there's still, you know, shortages or spot shortages of certain products.
So it sounds like a miscalculation as much as a pandemic. That is, some of this is self-inflicted, this wound, right?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, you know, at the same time, though, in March 2020, would anyone predict that the economy would take off just a few months later?
Yeah.
You know, so it's understandable, but it definitely is in some ways, you know, I think industries across the country kind of made the wrong bet. They prepared for a downturn, and instead we got the opposite.
And I guess my point was that, in other words, some of these businesses weren't shut down because the factories were sick, but because they just said, you know what, we have to shore up our costs. We're going to cut labor. We're going to cut production because nobody's going to have any money. That turned out not to be true. The government gave people money. The rich continued to prosper anyway. So suddenly there were markets for goods. Maybe some of these businesses could have been in operation. Was that your discovery also, Austin?
Yeah, exactly. So right. I mean, some of it was, you know, government mandated, but a lot of it was a choice, is that they were basically, you know, that everyone didn't know what to expect. And so, like you said, they kind of lowered the hatches and just wanted to reduce costs as much as possible.
Well, then next,
and then the second aspect. Go ahead.
No, by all means, finish that thought. The second.
Oh, the second aspect is just that, you know, supply chains are long these days. You know, it's you aren't reliant only on the factory up the street. You're reliant on factories in Mexico. You're reliant on factories in China and Vietnam and Italy. And so the point is, as the pandemic kind of spread, different countries had different restrictions. it made it really, even a good example was ship loading became really difficult. I think there was upwards of 20 or 30 or 40 ships stuck off the coast of Los Angeles waiting to unload. And so over time, it just made every part in the supply chain kind of got a little bit slower and more volatile. And so it just made it really hard to plan. And so you might one day have no components, and then 3 weeks later, they'll all arrive all at once. Mm. You don't need them 3 weeks later. You need them now. And so that's the kind of, it just makes it really hard to manufacture any complex product.
Austin Hufford writes about the U.S. manufacturing. He's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. In your piece, you said, and you mentioned this in part a moment ago, parts come from, for this single hot tub, parts come from 7 countries, 14 states. They travel a cumulative 887,000 miles to make one hot tub. Parts come from as close as 80 miles away, but also from parts of Asia. Some travel the Panama Canal. You know, I think this, and particularly chips, make a lot of Americans think, okay, how about if we rely more on American manufacturing? I wonder if that sort of pivot is even possible, considering where we are now.
I mean, I think a lot of it depends on what we're willing to pay, right? Like, a lot of times the reason why we produce overseas is because it's cheaper. It's, the market drives down the cost. And I think that, these hot tubs are already multiple thousands of dollars. And so if we say we want it to have not only be made in America, this product is assembled here, but have all of its components from here too, I imagine the cost could be much higher. At the same time, I think there is widespread agreement in Washington, D.C. and across the country that certain industries do need to be made more in America.
Yeah.
Like it looks like chips is one example where there's a lot of support to have at least some amount of capacity brought back here. And we'll see if that extends to other industries like medicines or even N95 face masks.
Yeah, PPE. I mean, I don't know who's going to do that. It seems like everybody got into that game very quickly. That was easier to manufacture on a mass scale. And maybe the United States needs to sort of, this government's going to get involved and muck this up, I know. But let's make a list of the things we have to have a certain percentage of produced in the United States. Boy, that's the worst kind of government. But I mean, really, I don't like the idea of us being vulnerable to a pandemic or to China not wanting to cooperate, whatever, right?
Right. I mean, a lot of companies and even hospitals I've spoken to, that they say that they think a lot more about the word resiliency now. And so, one hospital said when they think about their PPE supply chain, they think maybe they'll do a third abroad in Asia, maybe a third nearby, maybe in Mexico and the Caribbean, and then a third domestically. And so they say, that's like how they're thinking about it, so that they have, let's say if there's a hurricane here, they can still get it from somewhere else, but it's also not going to be too cost exorbitant because they're still getting two-thirds from more cheaper countries. And so I just think there's going to be more approaches like that because all these companies have realized, the car makers, a $5 chip is stopping a $20,000 car from leaving the factory. Obviously, if they could have it other ways, they would pay a lot more for their chip, but it's too late. They can't pay any amount, really.
Well, that's what I was thinking when you said, but some of this would be cost prohibitive. Do Americans want to pay more for the hot tub? And I'm thinking, if I'm in for $3,500 for a hot tub, I'm probably in for $3,700. I guess it does depend on the number, but you almost wonder if, in fact, Americans wouldn't pay a little more for some of these products, especially if they didn't know it is what it is,
No, definitely. And I think there is some movement. I mean, there's some, I've talked to some plastic manufacturers who are trying to bring back, some of their supply chains. They think with the growth of fracking and the growth of America becoming more energy independent, is going to be kind of a long-term benefit to producing more plastic components domestically. So we'll see kind of what happens in the long run. But it's certainly been a crazy 18 months for manufacturing. I mean, everyone tells me that they've never seen anything like this and that everyone thought that it would be resolved by now. But here we are in it's September again, right? And things are still not back to normal.
Yeah, if you do what I do, an easy way to get phone calls on your talk show is say, hey, how long is it taking you to get stuff? And the phone lines light up with people saying they're still waiting for their vanity from last February. And I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Austin Hufford writes about this stuff for the Wall Street Journal. It's a really smart piece, Austin. Nice job. And let's talk again down the road as you continue to follow these kind of stories.
sounds great.